In the interest of community service, Power 88 presents live talk shows to inform, enlighten, and to stimulate thought and dialogue. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KCEP or the EOB. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the program, or call in and participate at 647-3688. Funding for Police Promoting Unity radio talk show on KCEP Power 88 is underwritten by the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. And here is your host.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Mujahid Ramadan, and welcome to Police Promoting Unity. It is middle of the week, over the hump day. Police Promoting Unity here on KCEP Radio 88.1. Welcome, and thank you for allowing us into our lives, into your lives, and we appreciate it. It's a beautiful day. It's headed into the holiday season, really, at this point in time, myself. We also have our very capable and ever handsome and good looking, and yeah, he's a police officer too. He goes out to the range and does his testing on a frequent basis. Officer Michelle Potter. Michelle, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing wonderful, Mr. Ramadan. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And yeah, we're into the holiday season. The Black Friday just happened last week, so people are out shopping for the holidays. So I know we had Lieutenant Joel Lepore here recently talking about holiday initiatives. So just remember to take all those necessary precautions when you're out shopping so that you don't become the victim of either a vehicle burglary or a robbery. We want to make sure that your holiday season this year is safe, mm-hmm. and that you have a wonderful time sharing all these gifts that you're purchasing for your family.
Well, you know, and also I think you probably may have another guest that will come on to talk more about safety during the holiday seasons, even before the holiday, before Christmas gets here, as a matter of fact. I think somebody may be on our radar screen.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, that'll
good,
be coming
good
up.
Idea. Well, but even better than that, we have for today our guest, and this is actually, I had said to his administrative assistant, tell him that if he doesn't show up, I'm going to send the police looking for him. But he actually is the police. We have Under Sheriff Chris Darcy here from the executive staff, really. He's the number two man in LVMPD. Mr. Under Sheriff, welcome to Police Promoting Unity.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Thank you.
Chris, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. And we were talking out there in the lobby. Now, were you ever in, well, it wasn't Bowling Area Command during your career when you were in traffic and patrol and coming up in your career. Was it Bowling?
Right. Well, the department was a lot different 31 years ago.
Yes.
You know, when I came on, we had 3 area commands. We now have 10.
Right.
So we've divvied things up a little bit differently throughout mm-hmm. the years. But obviously, back then, we worked everywhere. I mean, I worked in Northeast is where I started. That area command, the building itself doesn't even exist anymore, right?
Okay.
So we've grown and we've moved, but back then policing was divvied up into 3 different area commands, mm-hmm. so we covered a good majority of the valley, and it was a small department then, and we, you know, worked throughout. So
you know, now you get
to experience the entirety of the city.
You said 31 years at this point in time. Now, Chris, are you indigenous to Southern Nevada? If you were here for police department, we say we claim you at this point in time, 31
yeah.
years that you've given. But
like a native.
Did you move here or did you high school
so,
here?
Yeah, no, I grew up outside of Philadelphia,
okay.
outside of West Philadelphia,
okay.
and then went to college and then was watching TV. I wanted to become a police officer. I did some time in the military and then decided after watching Cops, you know, narrowed it down. And I saw Las Vegas as that's the place to be.
Okay.
And it is, and it was, and it continues to be. So
definitely.
The growth here has been phenomenal. The organization, I say, is the best in America, uh-huh. and proud to be here all this time.
And the Eagles have a good winning team.
Yeah, now, of course. Yeah, yeah.
After years of struggle.
Now that I have to be a Raiders fan, the Eagles actually start winning. Right?
But, that's it.
Yeah,
so look, but you say the transition. You know, we say 21st Century Policing. That's what LVMPD really reflects. And across the country, and even Department of Justice says, you know, 21st Century Police Agency. Big difference from the agency that you joined 31 years ago. Let's talk about yourself. You said you came here from Philly, joined the police department, your own career, three area commands. Now you have 10. You have 2 cell phones that you carry around, and your hair is not black as it used to be, and I don't have any, so I can't be talking about that. But nonetheless, you've seen the transition. What has it been like? How do you see that transition having been?
Well, the one thing that really has kind of stood throughout is the quality of people that we hire, right? The lifeblood of the organization are the people. And I've met over the time some great human beings, right? Some great people that are truly dedicated to doing the right thing and protecting the community. But the challenge really is in the growth and the pressures and the volume and complexity of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, years ago, officers could respond on a call and, you know, we didn't have to do as much documentation. There wasn't body cameras. There wasn't that level of accountability. Now, obviously, we could argue that the accountability is necessary, right? That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make things differently, mm-hmm. right? It seems like in any career, things don't generally get easier as you go. They tend to get more complex and harder.
Mm-hmm.
And policing has been no different, mm-hmm. right? And the last few years significantly, right, have been challenging. But, you know, we stand positioned to meet the challenges of the future. And that's based upon the value and the hard work of the folks that come to work every day in Metro, whether
right.
you're commissioned, civilian, or, you know, you work in the jail or in the lab, whatever. It's a team effort.
You're talking about, you're saying an agency of about 7,000 staff overall?
Yeah, about 6,000.
6,000.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, huge budget in order to support that.
Yes.
Let's talk about, because some of your transition has been like the use of force and officer involved shooting. You've had to work through
certainly.
Some of those processes.
Yes, yes. And we've been engaged in that process of collaborative reform since 2011, and that never really stops, obviously. We're
mm-hmm.
constantly reforming, revising policies, looking at things through the eye of de-escalation.
Mm-hmm.
Our officer-involved shootings based on a program that we've really pushed into place to every area command. We actually modeled it after what we did here, what at the time Captain Yesenia Yotomi did
mm-hmm.
In Bolden Area Command. We pushed it to every area command and throughout the department to make it really our mantra of how we move forward with de-escalation, right? We're
right.
always focusing on how we can communicate options better, we can slow momentum and reduce the amount of shootings that we have,
mm-hmm.
officer-involved shootings, and we reduced them in 2021. We were down to 10 from 19 the previous year. So that's almost, you know, a 50% reduction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, now, along with that, though, we've seen increased engagement in every area command across the valley. And again, back to Bolden again, it was one of the first or the first area command where we saw this level of engagement to now where it has a little league baseball team. The area command is engaged throughout the community as though the area command and the community really is the same thing. I mean,
yes.
you know, when there's an event from baseball or to a citizens in need or to dealing with the homeless or to dealing with mental illness, this area command under Captain Hatchett now continues to raise the bar, and Bolden continues to be like a model. I think within Metro as an agency, it tends to be like that type of model. But across the valley, I was with Captain Sims with the DREAM program, the Southwest Area
yeah.
Command, and I was talking to an individual who was telling me about the hockey program in the South Central Area Command.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more engagement. Thanksgiving, the huge turkey giveaways and the dinners, I think are the huge numbers. How much is engagement with community members and being involved in community members' lives, non-law enforcement, how valuable
right.
is that?
It's actually the most valuable thing, right? We derive our power from the community, right? And we need to have that trust. We need to have that transparency and that relationship. And I think police agencies across America, if they're going to be successful, have to really invest in that engagement with the community. And it's not just really a term, right? It has to be like woven into the fabric of everything that organization does. So
right.
whether you're the patrol officer that's covering a sector beat, an area within the community,
mm-hmm.
or you're a chief, a captain, an undersheriff, you have to know people and kind of expose your humanity and understand their humanity, right? And connect right. as people and communities. And it's not always pleasant. And sometimes you have to deal with like topics that are uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
but you'll never get any better if you don't go through that phase of working through those problems together. And then you come out of it stronger.
Right.
Because, I mean, we can all be from different areas and even have different opinions.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, we come up with the solution that's best for the community.
Mm-hmm. You know, they say cops have to become comfortable, have to realize to become comfortable with the uncomfortable. How accurate is that?
100% accurate. We talk about that all the time. Like, change is hard. It's like exercise, right? You know, if you're trying to lose weight, it doesn't come easy. You have to sweat. It takes work.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing with changing policing or changing something in the community. You have to put that effort into it. It's uncomfortable. But at the end, you're glad you did it.
That's it. You know, see, the undersheriffs, when they come through this area here, like, remember Jim Dixon?
Uh-huh.
So I call him JD.
Well.
So now we have undersheriff CD here. Doug Gillespie said to me once, he said, Ramadan, you know, there are two things cops don't like. I said, okay, Sheriff, what's that? He said, they don't like the way things are and they don't like change. So it's like, okay, but actually we've come to see and be able to identify the stresses that go into the life of the men and women who provide public safety in this valley right here. 24/7, You have two cell phones. Even Michelle, he has two. Most of the people around the ages I see now, two cell phones. I could say it's stressful. What do you think of in terms of the mental health of the men and women in the agency and its relationship with the citizens?
Yeah, I was just having that conversation the other day with somebody. When you look at the pressure we've put on police officers now, right, mm-hmm. the decision-making pressure in highly stressful situations, and there's a lot to it, right? There's a lot more. Everything's on camera. You know, there's these expectations that we're always perfect, and it's sometimes it's unrealistic. And if we don't support the mental health aspect of our cops, like, we can't expect them to perform to the level that we want them to perform. Right. So you have to, you know, backstop that with that type of wellness. And I think that's one thing that Metro, again, as a front-running organization, is going to be well-positioned to do as Sheriff McMahill comes in here, because that was one of his platforms, right, is officer wellness, so important. And it's not just talk, right? It's about actually instituting a bureau and instituting the people that are there to ensure that our cops can survive a 30-year career, because mm-hmm. that's what we want. We want you to come on the department and be part of this family and this community for 30 years. And we know that a lot of folks come from outside, like myself, right?
Right.
So we're coming from all around the country, and we want to kind of get you into this community and make you feel comfortable and survive a career that is challenging, right? It's very uncomfortable at times.
Very much so. You know, I see recruits in the academy, and sometimes I don't see them for like 3, 4, 5 years later. Because they'll show back up. They've gone through a certain phase of their careers. I'm finding the agency is becoming younger. There's a lot of young people out there on the street that you're having to deal with. And you're dealing with very diverse communities now. Very diverse communities. How does Metro move forward with dealing with issues in terms of diversity?
Yeah.
Misael and I were just talking about on the agency, we're seeing the growth in Hispanic, Latino populations in the Valley, but also in the agency. How does Metro incorporate all of this with the growing diverse populations here and the issues that we're dealing with nationally and locally around that?
Well, you invest in it with your folks, right? If it matters, you invest in it. And that's what we've done through our community engagement efforts, you know, through our MMAC committee, through officers that are out in area commands, understanding the power of MMAC and the power of the community and knowing folks and attending community events. And, you know, whether it's religion, ethnicity, wherever, you know, whether we're, you know, engaging in opportunities with LGBTQ community at the center and our partnerships and friendships with folks and all these parts of our valley. And I think we've done a great job in having a lot of folks, not everybody, right? It's
right.
Just unfortunate. We want to get everybody, but
no, get engaged, suspicious, you know? If you get everybody. It's going
to
be
But like just trying to make sure that we have those connectivities to where they feel comfortable coming to us, where they don't have to call the sheriff or the undersheriff, right? They can call their friend or their person on Metro, right? Their person that they feel comfortable with.
Right, right.
You know, and that's what's important.
You know, it's interesting about, we were just talking about there in the lobby about stereotypes and how the public can point fingers and say, they're stereotyping and they're profiling. But likewise, the public doesn't recognize it. Just in renewing the Adopt a Cop initiative with the LGBT Center, we were having a detailed discussion, and Tony Witten, one of our representatives there, Tony says that there's a historical relationship of a pushback from the LGBT community because of the Stonewall riots that happened maybe 60 years ago in New York. So these historical experiences present barriers when it comes to building relationships, and even in terms of recruiting, like with African Americans, the historical experience affects how people are seen. How well has Metro, which gets applauded around the country for many things, how well is Metro doing in terms of bridging those gaps?
I think we're doing a really fine job at bridging the gaps. I mean, the work is never done, right? Like, we can't say, oh, okay, we've accomplished it, because really we haven't, right? Until every single individual in this community feels that way, we really haven't. So, but we do work hard at it, and I can tell you that the change I've seen over the 31 years, right? You know, when I first became a cop, like, to be a gay cop, you would never say that, right?
Right.
And so now the folks that I know that are, they have no problem. They're not, you know, and I'm not going to say that maybe no discrimination ever happened because of it, right? Like, that would be unrealistic. But I think identifying it and then actually working towards getting to that place where, you know, there's none of that is where we want to be. But you'll never get there if you don't start, right? So, and I think we've made a lot of great progress in that. I mean,
Well, Officer Cambodge with the Sikh turban.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like 31 years ago, that wouldn't have happened. Most
think about
likely,
it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And even our officers in the Pride Parade, you know, I would say 30 years ago, we would have forbid that. Said, you can't do that. Right.
Think about
and
it.
Now we encourage it. Right.
Yes.
We're like, we need to be partners.
Is that 21st century policing?
It is. Yes, it is.
You know, and you have a very diverse community and a diverse economy in terms of gaming and tourism. A lot of people come here.
Yeah, there's no place in the world like Las Vegas. No place.
It's model.
That.
I mean, you know, we just need a winning football team.
We'll get there. but I think that in terms of policing, right, there's no other community that has the 24/7 and the gaming and now the sports and entertainment.
Yes.
You know, Vegas reinvents itself every few years or every few decades, you know, and now we're the sports and entertainment and gambling mecca, and everybody comes here and it's just we've had to change too. And a fact that most people don't know is that we'll deploy on a busy weekend or almost every weekend now because they're all fairly busy.
Yes.
But almost 800 to 900 overtime police officers to handle all the major events that are going on. Because you'll have a Raiders game, a Knights game, a concert, a this or that. And it requires a lot of staffing. And that amount of overtime officers is bigger than most mid-city police departments have in the entirety of their force.
Wow, that's right.
Right? So we're staffing that on a Friday and Saturday as compared to, you know, a mid-city somewhere that's the entirety of their police department. The average police department in America is like 200 people.
So, and you have an events planning unit that's already been out there involved in the planning also.
Right, and it's not stopping. We have Formula One coming. We have a Super Bowl coming. You know, we have all
Formula
these
One.
Events. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, you cops do know what's going on. You also know where all the good restaurants are also. You know, one of your cops told me one day, I said, man, you know a good restaurant? He said, you think I got this big? Not no restaurants. You've also had some challenges you have to face with 1 October.
Yes, that was
reflect on that for a moment, if you would.
Well, that, you know, those types of events, horrible. Hopefully, they never happen again, right? Mm-hmm. But tragedies, you learn from it. You enact policies and you move forward and find ways to prevent those things from happening again. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we took a very thorough look back at everything that happened, what we did, how we can improve from it. It's such a tragedy. And moving forward, we're better poised to handle events, there's no way to prevent like everything from happening, but I know that as we move forward and having worked in the counterterrorism space throughout my career, and I know the priorities of the organization moving forward is really to focus on that terrorism aspect, you know, be it domestic, internal or international, which is more of an external threat. But the challenges are many. The challenges are there. And we talked about mental health earlier, right? We see people with mental health issues that are becoming radicalized rather rapidly,
right?
The path to radicalization now through the online can happen in a matter of days, weeks, months, whereas before it would take, you know, a little bit longer, which gives us more time to interdict. Now we have to be more nimble in our response. So we get threats at school. We get threats from, you know, online threats to somebody who reports it to us. We have a procedure and a team that goes out and rigorously investigates that to make sure that we can stop something before it happens. And, you know, I wish we had the clues or there was some indication that don't want to say his name, but the person who did the shooting at the festival, that we could have stopped him and arrested him or something, interdicted that at some point. But we've got to work hard to ensure that never happens again.
No, Chris, see something, say something. Still important?
Yeah. Very important, right? That never changes. You know, we've always needed the public's help. Whether it's see something, say something, or whichever campaign, there's a few out there, right, that they're so important that whether it's terrorism or it's just within your community, it all starts there.
Right.
It's that person that thinks, that doesn't look right. That's unusual, and takes the time to make the call.
Mm-hmm.
And then our responsibility is when they make the call to make sure that we actually do something, and then we do it right, and we follow up appropriately to ensure that there's no threat.
It seems like now more than ever, that's very important. You can't just dismiss any tip that you get about that.
Right.
Yeah, no, we are not dismissing any tip. You have to leave no stone unturned in those types of threat. Unfortunately, in this day and age, right, where it can come asymmetrically, right? It can be from anywhere.
Right.
So we have to be ready.
You know, and both of you, to our listening audience, you know, I hear it sometimes and it didn't sink in until one day I was at the headquarters, as a matter of fact. I came out and there was a person walking throughout the parking lot, like just snapping pictures. And I thought, okay, that's probably just a tourist shooting pictures of the police station. Then my other mind that I just had heard say to me, But what if it's not that right there? And the officer I had talked to was in counterterrorism. He says, we prefer for you to call and it not turn out to be anything. We'd rather burn that energy up on that than you not call and it turns out to be more and more. So certainly we can see that from that level of terrorism, national, international, local. But we can also see it when it comes to crime on the street. You know, it's just being able to identify this is something that's happening that's damaging to this neighborhood and be willing to talk to your area command. But we're also finding out if the area command is engaged with the community, then the community will let the area command know this is what's happening. And people on our MAC committee like Alex Bernal, he's always talking to the officers about have that type of engagement to where information sharing becomes natural for you. So we found out that engagement actually can help combat and reduce crime. Just so many more questions for you. The MAC committee, you mentioned that just for a moment. Been, you know, just before the George Floyd murder, really virtually in front of our eyes, you know, we had gone through the in custody use of force policy, and Dora LeGrand and many others had walked through and did some fine tuning on it. The sheriff accepted it. I think you were there for it, and it turned out to be a model idea. How valuable has the MAC committee been to Sheriff Lombardo and this agency in terms of the things we've discussed?
Yeah, I mean, throughout the years, it's so valuable. When you look at issues, whether it's use of force, it could be a variety of issues in policing, even body cameras, right? Like or internal affairs, you know, all the different topics that are important to the community. So that having that diverse group of folks to give us that honest feedback to tell us when we're getting it wrong. Like, we don't want to tell us we're getting it right. We need you to tell us when we're getting it wrong. Don't let us go off a cliff, right? Tell us. You guys aren't looking at this right, you know? And so we can take another look. And that's the power of that advisory committee, because it is diverse. It is a group of folks that really have their eye on policing and have knowledge about it, right? So it's not somebody who doesn't understand us. We know that you do. But we rely on you to tell us when we're making a mistake, because sometimes as an organization, we just don't see everything, right? And that's backstopping, right? That's the power, right? And that's the important part. And organizations need that. Whether it's, even in our executive staff, right, we always have to have somebody that will have the opposite opinion, right, to tell me what we're missing, right, because we might fall into that groupthink, right? Oh, we all think we're doing the right thing. We're not. We need somebody to say, wait a minute, have we considered this? So the power is in the diversity.
That is
right? That is what it is, because you have diversity of thought, diversity of opinion, and then we can then look at the diversity of actions that we're going to take, and then we can say we've done our homework at least before we've gone from A to B or made a decision.
Yes.
And it's not like, well, why did you do that? We can say, well, here's where we got, or here's where the information that we received, and here's where we are. Here's where we've landed at the end. So,
you know, you brought back another thought to mind. This agency tends to study any and every event that occurs to go back to look at how to improve. Is that a working process? You'll always be doing that and constantly learning and growing?
Yeah, we will. Like, when it comes to use of force, we look at every bad example, right, that you see on the news. Every one of us sees it now with social media. You know, police officers shoot somebody, this or that, and we go back and we look at it and we like, would that happen here? Is our policy not strong where we don't cover to where they can't do something that would lead to that? You know, how can we shore that up? And then how can we train our folks to handle it the right way? So if we see something that really we think was inappropriate somewhere else, we want to make sure our cops are doing it the right way here. And every year we take a look, we do like a look back. So we circle back and we look at all the shootings, all the uses of force, pursuits, you know, dog bites, any of that, and say, okay, how could it have been prevented? And let's make sure we're not doing the wrong thing. So we have to it's like continuous improvement.
So anyone who's going to be on the executive staff can realize that getting there is still a continued education. I see, and I didn't get a chance to just, I saw him standing in there in the window there of the studio there, Lieutenant Jose Hernandez, and Jose sit where Misael is sitting at this point in time, and he was a co-host on this right here. Excellent person, Lieutenant, just tested to become captain. Misael mentioned Officer Joe Lepore was on. Joe tested to become captain. Future of Metro, with those kind of young officers, I say young men at this point in time in my life, at that mid-management level, how does the future of Metro look?
I think the future is very bright. Interestingly, I sat here and did the show when I was in the PIO as
Wait, hold it. We have another alumni of the PIO?
Yes. Okay. Yes. When Jerry Keller was the sheriff, I was PIO for a couple of years.
Okay.
And, yeah, and as was here as well. It's kind of funny.
It's interesting. I didn't, that's the aspect you say, meeting people in their career. Yeah. I didn't know that you were a microphone guy from PIO.
Yeah.
Who was it that, who was he just tested for captain? One of the Clarksons. Who is
Brandon.
Brandon, yeah. He was came through PIO. I told him he had an unfair advantage to everybody else, though. But, so anyway, you the whole process. I mean, just so many things. And even young men, officers like Misael Potter here, you know, numbers are growing in terms of his own ethnic population. The numbers are growing in the Valley. The career opportunities. Is LVMPD and public safety still a good career opportunity?
It's the amazing career. It's probably one of the most rewarding careers that I could even imagine. I mean, obviously, I haven't done any other career because I've been here for all this time. But, I mean, really, the ability to get to know so many people in the community and so many different types of organizations that are in this valley, like we were talking about Leadership Las Vegas and going through that program. And it just, you know, working for LVMPD provides opportunities out there that are more than just, you know, to be an officer and arrest people, right? It's to grow as a person and help grow and be part of this ever-changing community. So our leadership team has some amazing opportunities. And when you look at what's going on in this valley, I don't see it changing anytime soon. We're in a growth phase. I think we'll always be in a growth phase, as it seems. And I think being part of Metro, you're part of a winning team, right? And we're the best of the best. And I think the officers should be so proud of the work that they do. It's not an easy job. They work, you know, graveyard. They're handling highly stressful situations. They're dealing with people that are going through horrible times in their lives. They could be on alcohol and drugs, you know, access to weapons, like all these different things. And it's not easy. It's harder than it's ever been. And that's why Metro
is not 20 minutes like on the TV shows.
No, it's not like watching Law and Order, right? Like where they have it solved and
doesn't get like
minutes.
That. Okay, Blue Blood and all that.
Yeah. No, not quite that simple.
I heard, and I think this quote probably came to me from an officer in there. They said, you know, police officers, men and women, they meet the best people on their worst deeds and the worst people on their worst days. There's just no other than that. It's the nature, it's the culture of the work. Leadership Las Vegas graduate. That is it's interesting enough.
Class 2020.
And we were talking about it. I think it was much of a experience for your classmate. How many was in your class?
We had 58. Yeah.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah. I think we had about 45 in ours.
Yeah.
And of course, if you talk to our classmates, all of the class of 1996, that was in the previous century, you know. But all of them say, that was the best class ever in Leadership Las Vegas. For you as an experience, what was that like? And being a police officer.
Yeah. I thought it was great because it enabled me to meet people that I probably never would have met that had completely different views and opinions of me. And initially, you know, you don't really recognize what everyone does, but you get to know people as a person, not a job. Because let's face it, right? The way we are in society, like it's, you know, Chris the cop or Bill the plumber or whatever, right? So we kind of identify.
Joe the newsman over there.
Yeah, Joe the news guy. So we identify it like with what they do. But when you meet people for who they are and not what they do, you really get to know them. And then you can really appreciate the humanity and the connection with the person, right? And not just what they happen to do for a job, because none of us work forever.
That's for sure. You know, and that has been my experience. I've had the unique opportunity to meet within this agency, it's a huge laboratory of people that you can meet, that you kind of get to know them for who they are. And that in itself is an experience that is just enormously valuable, particularly for citizens, because we've also found among the MAC committee members, we find many of them have developed relationships and have gotten to know. Actually, Pastor Troy said he's been knowing you back to when you were in the Northeast Area Command.
Yeah. I worked with Pastor Troy about 20 years ago.
The Chosen.
And just those relationships, right?
That's
last.
That's it,
Chosen.
Yeah.
There's trust. You know what I mean? There's the ability that I could maybe not see him for a few months and then run into him. And it's like, you know, we still stay connected, right? Like,
We were in a meeting and somebody says something. He says, oh, no, I can tell you about this because Under Chief Darcy, we were doing this back. We did this in the Northeast Area Command. I'm thinking, you've been knowing Chris that long? He said, oh, yeah, we go back like that.
Yeah, we work some programs out there to bring the police into some of the church and the different communities where we really weren't, we didn't have connectivity back then. And so we did it.
You know what? They just announced. Mr. Undersheriff, I need an investigation here. They stole some of our minutes because they said we have 1 minute left. So I know something is happening. It went a lot. I mean, there's a ton more. Chris, thank you for your time. Just take your time out of your busy schedule as undersheriff with two cell phones going on. And best wishes to you in your retirement.
Thank you.
Talk to us. Let us know. At least you can change your cell phone number. If you don't, I'll reach out to you. I'd like to bring you back.
You have my personal number.
Gotcha. Yeah, then. And so catch you on the golf course or something like that when you're in town. Yeah. Say hello to the king, not the queen this time when you go back to England, okay? Miss L, any closing comments and observations here?
No, thank you so much for being on the show. We know now that there's a lot of pressure coming from PIO to become a great leader and make it up the ranks.
I'm the sheriff.
We're counting on you.
Absolutely. So, good luck in your retirement.
No doubt to our listening audience. Thank you for listening in and allowing for us to share a joyous conversation with, I'd say, a friend and a colleague and a person I've had the opportunity to know long, many years, and best wishes in your retirement. Thank you for coming on the show. To you for listening, allowing us in your lives, thank you, and we hope you enjoyed and were well informed. And remember, that which is obvious is not always true, and that which is true is not always obvious. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you next week on another edition of What's That Police Promoting Unity. Got the undersheriff in the house. Thank you,
Thank you so much.